Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, or afternoon or evening, whatever it is where you are. And thank you for joining us. My name is Dave Platt, and I hope you saw me yesterday. Today, I will be talking about storage on the Azure platform, and I've got about 2 hours worth of storage. And with me again is my co-presenter, Manu Cohen-Yashar from Israel, and he will be talking to you about SQL Azure and also about diagnostics.
Good morning.
Glad you could come. So, did we have fun yesterday?
Oh, yes, we did.
We did. Okay. So, we're going to have more fun today. So, we're geeks, right? We like stuff like this. And if you're here watching this, I'll bet you're a geek, too. All right. Let's talk about Windows Azure Storage. And let us see. You know, we talked about computation yesterday, you know, getting a compute instance up into the cloud, doing some computation, running an IIS, handling requests and so on, doing some thinking and the different kinds of requirement, the different kinds of compute instances that you could have, small, medium, large, etc. But if you're going to have any kind of serious enterprise application, you really just have to have storage. You got to have storage. You got to have heart. You got to have storage somewhere, somehow, something. Whatever it is that you're doing, you've got bank accounts, you've got stock exchanges, you've got packages to track, pizzas to deliver, doctor's appointments, prescriptions to fill, whatever. You've got to have storage of some kind. All right. So, and now, you know, we know we have to have storage. And what kind of storage do we have to have? Well, the whole point of going to the web is to scale, isn't it? If we didn't care about scaling, we wouldn't have gone to the cloud. That's why we went to the cloud, is so we can scale. And so when we think about how to store our data in the cloud, what the techniques that we use and the strategies that we take and the designs that we go through with, they need to scale well. Because if they don't, what's going to happen? The computational scalability that we have on the cloud, which we saw yesterday and which we decided is very nice, if our storage can't scale, well, that is just going to take that beautiful scalable computation and it's just going to bottleneck it into complete unusability. It doesn't matter how wide the highway is. If you've got a bottleneck here that takes you 2 hours to get through, for that 100 meters of pavement, it doesn't matter how nice the rest of the road is, because it's going to take you 2 hours to get from here to there. So we need storage, and when we have that storage, it really has to scale. Want to care to comment on that?
I remember so many situations where I have beautiful computation, but then I have a database, a huge database, a single point of failure, and there everything just blocks.
And some idiot yanks the plug out of the wall and the whole thing goes down, doesn't it?
Exactly. So I need something that will handle data, but it will scale well.
Yes, yes. And we haven't really had these kinds of architectures before. So you're going to be seeing kind of more new architectural ideas today probably than you saw yesterday. You know, you've been thinking about storage since forever, but a lot of these ways are going to be new ways of thinking about storage, primarily dictated by this need for scalability, which we've talked about but never really had to confront. Okay, here we are, and we're kind of stuck with it today. Okay. All right, very, very quick review. Let's talk about the kinds of storage that we have. To my way of thinking, as living things break down into the animal and plant kingdoms, as medicine breaks down into the broad kingdoms of medical versus surgical, so it seems to me that the dividing line for the different ways of thinking about storage sort of breaks down into non-relational versus relational. And when I say non-relational, what I mean is in Windows Azure, we've got structures such as blobs, right? A binary large object is what a blob means. Just kind of a bucket of bits. That's kind of all it is. It's a bucket of bits. It's got a label on the outside so you can tell what's in the bucket. We'll talk about blobs a lot more. I like blobs. Use blobs for a lot of things. We'll talk about blobs. Things like queues, first-in, first-out structures. I was explaining that to my 7-year-old and 10-year-old daughter just the other day about a queue, first-in, first-out versus a stack, a last-in, first-out, and pushing the stack and popping the stack. And my 10-year-old looks at me and says, "You know, Dad, you really are a geek. Did you know that?" So, anyway, So we've got queues. I don't see that anybody's actually implemented a stack in Windows Azure Storage, though I suppose you could fairly easily on top of a blob if that was something you ever actually gave a damn about. And tables. When I say tables here, I mean non-relational tables. Tables where one table does not automatically point to a different table and that table point to five other tables. Just straight rectangular arrays of data. And we'll see those in a lot more detail. What's good about these, the good news and the bad news, as always, the good news and the bad news, is that they don't generally enforce data integrity. Because they don't enforce data integrity, they tend to scale very well. So, and the drawback, of course, Platsky's second law, you saw that yesterday, right? The amount of crap in the universe is conserved. You got less crap over here. You must have more crap over there. There's no such thing as making it disappear. All right. We've got a lot less crap getting in the way of scaling, which is really nice. The drawback, though, is that whatever data integrity the program requires is now the responsibility of us, the program developer, to take care of providing whatever integrity, referential or otherwise, our new storage actually requires. Okay. So that is storage kingdom number one, non-relational storage, and that goes by the name of Windows Azure Storage. That's kind of a very generic kind of name, hard to know just from the name exactly what it covers. But that's what it covers. When they say Windows Azure Storage, separate storage account, it comes with non-relational. If they called it Windows Azure non-relational storage, then you would know exactly what the term meant. Right? The second kingdom that I'd like to talk about is the relational storage. And this goes by the name of SQL Azure. It is a separate product that you can add on. You can get yourself a separate account to SQL Azure. And this is a classic relational table-based database. It is conceptually very similar to taking our good old friend Microsoft SQL Server that we've been living with since I've been in this business anyway, and it's getting to be a while. And they took it and stuck it up on the cloud so we can do things with it in the cloud. All right, that's nice. It's there. It's in the cloud. We got it out of our closet, which is nice. I mean, I need the room back, and I'm not really a SQL administrator, so I've got it out somewhere else where I don't have to futz with it, which is kind of nice. And we've got in it the classic data integrity services. For example, if you have a table that refers to another table, you won't be able to delete that referred to table because you've got records in table A that still point at table B, and so SQL will make sure that you can't get rid of it while you still have the one. And you can do, I mean, I've seen guys go to school for this. I mean, you do a lot of stuff with SQL, don't you?
Of course.
They go just completely bonkers over complicated SQL operations such as right joins versus left joins, things of this nature. I'm finding it an interesting artifact of just the way the computing world is going. There is just so much more to know, so much to know that the amount of things there are in the world to know just go up and up and up like that. The amount of stuff that anybody can fit in their heads working as hard as they can is more or less a constant. Therefore, the percentage of things in the world on which one can be an expert just kind of shrinks and shrinks. And I myself have pretty much had to give up doing any kind of serious work in SQL just because there's so many other things to know, and that's not really my specialty. It's kind of frustrating. I hate to see it go. Computing is having to specialize the way medicine has had to specialize for the same reason, just because there's so much more to know. And I myself have just, within a year made the decision that, I'm just going to have to let go of SQL. So it's good to have guys like Manu around that I can hire when I need somebody to do this kind of stuff.
So I'll speak about SQL Azure later on.
And that's good. He will be, after this talk, Manu will be talking about SQL Azure. And you come and talk to me when you want to learn about user interfaces, right?
You know, it depends what are the complexity of your queries. Sometimes all you need to know is just a very simple query or a simple transaction, and thus you can use Windows Azure Storage. But when you need a more complex query or a more complex data handling, then you would go to SQL Azure.
That's the kind of thing that you would think and that you would look. And now I've got a couple of polls that I would like to run here. I would like you, please, to tell me What kind of storage are you currently using in your Azure projects or planning to use in your Azure projects? Are you going to use Windows Azure Storage only, by which I mean the blobs, the queues, the tables, or SQL Azure Storage only, by which I mean the relational database, or both? And right now, you know, just about everybody is saying both. Or you don't know, you haven't decided.
25%, I don't know. No.
Well, and that's okay. They haven't, they're here to find out what Azure is about and where they can use it. And like I said yesterday, the only thing that matters is, oh yeah, what's in it for me? That's now, what they're here for.
We will speak today about the differences between SQL Azure and Azure Storage.
Absolutely.
And the different scenarios, when would you use what? So okay. We might help the 38% of people who do not know or haven't decided yet.
Well, that's okay. That's why they're here. Good. We're glad you came. That's the kind of thing that we do. And this is interesting because of the people who do know, essentially everybody is saying mixed mode. 11 are saying we're going to use both, and only 3 say we're going to use one and not the other. So, all right. Good. That's the kind of thing I want to know. Thank you for telling us. That will help us target the kind of things that we're going to be saying. And the second poll that I'd like to have here is when you access your Azure Storage, are you currently using or are you planning on using? Most of these things you can get at with a RESTful web service, which is nice. There is also a storage client API, and we'll be showing you both. And my question is, which are you using now? Are you using the web services? Are you using the more strongly typed client API? Are you using them both? Or you haven't made up your mind quite yet which ones you think. And again, we're seeing more or less the same thing. Just about everybody is using both. Either they're using both or they haven't decided which one
they're going to use. Or they haven't decided yet.
It is relatively rare that somebody uses just one or uses just the other. Okay, very good. Thank you for telling me. That's that will be very helpful in helping me tailor this talk to the kinds of things that you're doing and the kinds of thinking that you're thinking these days. Very good. Thank you. All right. So now let's go talk about Windows Azure Storage, which is what the rest of this hour and the next hour are about, before we go into SQL Azure, which will be Manu's talk at the end of the second hour. All right. So we've got Windows Azure Storage. You will have a Windows Azure Storage account. Generally, you get it when you sign up for a computation account. Generally, you are in a package whereby you get some a Windows Azure Storage account along with it. Generally, SQL Azure is a separate sign-up, and you have to go do a separate sign-up for that extra. It looks, from what I saw during that poll, it looks like just about everybody has done that. And perhaps if I were Microsoft, I would consider putting a bundle of packaging them all together. You pay one credit card and you get them all.
Well, when you have an Azure account, you're entitled to create a database in SQL Azure.
All right.
But it has limitations, of course, but...
Always. Sort of like when you go to your cable provider and you get internet and phone and TV cable from the same one. Generally cheaper if you buy it all in the same bucket, right? All right. And so you can get at these things there. The way that you access this, each of these storage abstractions has its own RESTful web service. And so you can call a RESTful web service and put data into a table or get it out, put a message in a queue or take it out, do things with blobs. I'll be showing you those. There is also a client API of strongly typed objects. And I have to say, this is where I spend my time. I'm an object-oriented programming kind of guy. That's kind of how I came up through the ranks. That's kind of the way I thought. I myself do not reach for a web service unless there is something that I can't get done in a client object API. But that's just my own way of looking at the world.
The beautiful thing about storage that it is independent, which means that my computation will be putting something in a blob, will be putting something in storage. Now somebody else, a client on-prem application, it can use the same blob as well. It can get to that blob using RESTful API or using a very simple web service. And such, it doesn't have to go through your computation. This means that your application can put static data in blobs, and then the client can get to that information directly. They do not need to go through you. This means that with Blob and Azure Storage in general, you can have a mediator between all sorts of applications, between your cloud application or between other applications. Everybody can just put the data in a common place, which is Azure Storage, and then everybody can access that data. So the RESTful interface and those web services are very handful for having that mediator.
That's an interesting notion. Before we started preparing for this talk, I hadn't really given a whole lot of thought to this hybrid notion. Most of the clients I myself deal with are doing sort of pilot level projects and relatively small, tightly circumscribed, and sort of haven't scaled out to the point where they're bumping into these hybrid situations. That's a good idea, and I'm certainly going to take it and use it in the future.
Another thing is that we spoke yesterday about management, mm-hmm. and we spoke about PowerShell. And using PowerShell and other tools, you can use those RESTful API, and they abstract the RESTful API. And so you can see how many queues you have there in that queue, how many blobs you have there, etc. So you can manage the storage without the computation node at all.
That's another good point. So, all right. So you can get it through RESTful Web Services or with a client API. And I myself lean to the client API, and you guys are about 50-50 is what you said. Good. All right. When you set up your storage account, well, you probably saw it yesterday when I went into the Windows Azure Explorer. I will go here now and let you look at it. Okay, like so, and we'll wait while these guys spin up. Your storage account is here, okay, hosted services, storage account, and CDN. That database is, that's the SQL Azure thing right here, the database. The storage account with the blobs and such is here. Right, that's where it is under hosted services. And we can make a new storage account if we want. There, like that. And use lowercase letters and numbers. You can damn well lowercase them, you turkey. Who's insisting on lowercase? I haven't. All right, and you can set this here. You can store these in a region anywhere in the U.S. is fine. I'm not going to bother with affinity groups today. And I'll create this and pick up subscription. I thought that, yes, okay, there we go. All right, that's the 30-day free subscription that you saw yesterday. And eventually up will come this created account. All right.
You know, I really would want my storage to be hosted as near as possible to my application.
As near as possible to your compute application.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So for that, it is quite often that I do use affinity groups. Mm-hmm. And in those affinity group, I just declare on my name, on a group which I name with a friendly name, mm-hmm. Where do I host my storage account? And my storage, and where do I host my applications? And then when I create an application and I create a storage, I can always refer to that same affinity group. And this way, I am sure that my compute application and my storage, my Azure storage, sits on the same data center. And this way, the latency of getting the data and using the data and doing something with will be, of course, lower, and the price, because when data is transferred between data centers, I have to pay for that. But when data is transferred inside the data centers, there's no fee. So I'm very happy to create an affinity group, and this way declare that my applications and my data will sit on the same spot.
Okay, cool. All right, going back to my PPT now. There, so you can see I can store them wherever I feel like storing them. I can, a geographical location. Mano points out that you probably want them near your compute instance. There's this thing called the CDN that is the component download or content download network or something of that nature. And when you have a lot of read-only data, classic example is a streaming jukebox of songs. That is a thing that you can use. I will describe it a little bit later. You can move it closer to your customers, so it will be quicker to get to them. They also charge less for data downloaded from there than from your read-write storage account. We will see that in a little bit later in this talk, the content download network.
Right? Is it like similar to a cache?
I would call it conceptually similar to a cache. I'm sure if you went to the Azure group and tried to use that word, they would argue why that wasn't quite the word, but it certainly makes sense to me.
It is a cache.
All right. To me it is, yes. That's, but you don't hear them use that word for it, is my point. So, on the other hand, you know, did I show you in my .NET book the other day? I actually coined a term in there. It's in Chapter 4 called MINFU. Right? M-I-N-F-U. Stands for Microsoft Nomenclature Foul-Up in polite company. And it happens a lot, right? The whole COM, DECOM, ActiveX debacle, that's a giant MINFU, right? And Microsoft is good at inventing things. They're not so good at naming the things they invent. So much so that I actually coined a word for that, and it's in a Microsoft press book. So anyway... I hope you'll all use it in your writing and send me links to it so I can get it into the Oxford English Dictionary. Thank you. Right. But moving right along, my friends. Here, let's go and we will... here. Now, as we were seeing yesterday, and I'm going to show you examples of this today, if you're building, when you're doing development, in general, you probably don't want to deploy every single build up into the cloud. It takes some amount of time. It costs some amount of money. It lowers the number of turnaround debugging runs that you can get. And think about it, man. How many actual good turnaround debugging runs do you get in a single day? You know, you take out the time, you know, goofing coffee and surfing the web and downloading things that you should not be downloading and going to pointless meetings and things of this nature. How many good debugging shots do you actually get? And the answer is probably, you know, 6 or 8 tops. And therefore, anything that can lower the overhead of these and let you get more of them is a good idea. So our development fabric that runs on the local computer has a mock storage, which I'll be showing you. It's an emulator of the storage in the cloud. It lets you, develop here locally without needing to touch the cloud. I wrote some samples on the airplane coming out here, as a matter of fact. It requires SQL Express, which installs with your Visual Studio 2010 that I always have. And that's where I wind up doing a whole lot of my work. I tend not to go to the storage until I'm just about ready to deploy. Now, you can argue that that's not a good idea. And in fact, here, this article will tell you right here, msdn.microsoft.com/dogdog320275. If you look there, you will find a number of differences between the real thing and the actual local storage. So there is some work that's going to have to get done to get you from here to there. Perhaps you want to try a test deploy earlier in the process, certainly before you start hitting any sort of deadlines. I don't know. I tend to spend most of my time in the local mock storage myself. Storage has some security. It uses HTTPS for an endpoint. It's got digital sign-in requests for operations that are privileged. It's got symmetric storage keys that you can use for your account. You can regenerate them using the portal that I showed you before. If you want to get granular on things and say, okay, this user is allowed to touch this piece, but he's not allowed to touch that piece, that's something you can do. Exactly where these security checks ought to take place so as to have the best scalability is a non-trivial design decision. We'll be talking about that more tomorrow when Manu does his talk on security and identity here in the web. But the point is they don't just leave these things lying out loose. There's some rather decent security that goes on top of them. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, we will talk about security of blobs and tables, etc. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in the security session.
Okay, very good. Yes.
Shared access signatures and stuff like that.
Indeed. All right. So, all right, let's talk about the storage abstractions here and the kinds of ways that you can use for storing your data and thinking about the storage of that data. My favorite one is the blob, right? You know, it's just got kind of a cool name. And these are just buckets of data. And in a way, you can think of them as a file, I suppose. The name blob means that that you don't know very much about their internal structure. My thoughts on these are still evolving, especially when I start seeing the next thing that you can do with that is a drive, which you take a blob, a big bucket of bits, and then you impose a file system on top of it. And now you actually have something that really does feel like an NT file system drive, only it lives in the cloud. We'll talk about this a little more when I finish my talk on blobs. I'm kind of two minds when I think about drives here. We've got tables. And that is structured storage. Now Microsoft likes to say it's a set of entities. An entity is a set of properties. Does anybody know a more ambiguous word in the entire English language than entity?
Set. The word set.
Set. No, set means that is a collection of something. And it has a boundary. Things that are in the set, things that are outside of the set.
There are 70 different meanings to the word set.
Well, that is true. You're right. That is the champion in the Oxford English Dictionary, yeah. Isn't it? If I recall correctly, it's over 100 now that you mention it. Object is up there.
Yeah.
But entity, you know, it is very difficult to pin down what an entity actually is. And so I myself find that if I think of a table in the classic rectangular sense of columns, some of which may be optional, and then a bunch of rows which represent individual instances of those columns, then I find I have the right mental model, and I find they're fairly easy to think about. And our old friend the queue, our first-in, first-out structure, that is not primarily used for putting data in and leaving it there, the way blobs often are and tables often are. Rather, a queue is more than anything else, it's kind of a distribution mechanism.
Communication channel.
Okay, fair enough. One could reasonably argue that it doesn't even belong in a talk on storage per se, although it is a place where you put things and get them out again, so maybe it is.
Look what we have here.
Yeah?
Well, that's amazing.
Okay.
I remember the word Windows Azure as an operating system for the cloud.
Operating system for the cloud. I like to think of it that way, too.
And, you know, and then I was thinking about the operating system on-prem that I have here at home.
Yeah, all right.
Windows 7, the Windows Server 2008. Mm-hmm. And with an operating system at home, you know, with Windows Server 2008, well, my storage is kind of files and maybe a little bit of a registry. That's
yeah,
it.
Okay.
Which is quite limited. It's kind of blobs. But now, with Windows Azure, I get much more. I get blobs, which is like the files, but mm-hmm. I get drives, and I get tables, which is a place to put entities. I get objects, and I can put those objects immediately to somewhere. I do not have to serialize them. I do not have to deserialize them. I can just handle them as they are. I take the object, and I put them somewhere, and I have queues. And all this in a scalable manner. So this operating system is much more advanced than a traditional operating system. The storage is much more advanced, and it takes advantage of the cloud. So if I want to enjoy the cloud, if I want to take leverage of the fact that I am in the cloud, I want to use Windows Azure. I do not want to take an operating system as is, like in other cloud operators, and I want to use Windows 7 2008 SE per se, and that's it, and to use the same cloud, the same storage system, because I do not leverage the cloud. But when I'm using Azure and Windows Azure storage, I have a much more complicated and advanced storage system, and yet I'm taking advantage of the cloud. I love Windows Azure storage.
Good. I'm glad you like it. I don't half mind it either. I wouldn't go so far as to say love myself.
I really like it. I really like it because, you see, you take advantage of the fact that you are in the cloud. You can see the cloudiness of your application.
God bless you, man. I'm glad you're here. Okay. Let's go talk about these things that Manu loves so much. Let's talk about blobs. All right, I like blobs too. Right. A blob here. These are the concept. If you think there's your account, my account, somebody's account, and then what you have inside your account, you can have a one or more, generally more, blob containers. And if you think analogies are everything in this business. You know what I mean. If you think of a container is a closet, and you can have any number of closets in your house. You know, it depends how much space you have, but you can have any number of closets. And in each closet, each container, they each start with a C, you can have a blob. And a blob is a bucket of bits, is what it is. So you can have any number of closets that you would like to have. Each closet has some metadata on it. A label on the closet says what's inside, whatever else you want to put on that label. Do not open till Christmas. Warning, bring breathing apparatus, that kind of thing. And then you have a blob. Each closet can contain any number of blobs. And blob is a bucket of bits. Again, each bucket of bits can have metadata on it, a label on the bucket of bits, usually telling you what one would find if one looked inside the bucket. Could be anything at all. Could be a happy birthday card if you wanted to. If I were you, I'd describe the bucket of bits. Things like its mime type, its name, things of this nature. And if you want to, sometimes you find this cost-effective, sometimes you don't. You can go inside the blob, and inside the bucket, there can be a certain amount of structure inside the bucket. You could look at individual pages if you want, or blocks if you want. Those are two different ways of putting a blob together. For myself, I'm going to give you what I call a pink flag. It's not a red flag to say thou shalt not. But I'm going to say pink flag, and the pink flag says that, if you find yourself doing this, stop and look and ask yourself if you're barking up the right tree. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm saying that before you do it, you should think carefully if you're doing the right thing. And I don't know, if I find myself messing around too much on the pages or blocks inside a blob, I like to stop and think, golly gee whiz, am I solving the right problem here? Because fiddling around at that lower level of abstraction, often I find I've gotten sidetracked and I'm going off the wrong key. So use the containers, use the blobs. If you find yourself touching individual pages or blocks, stop and ask yourself if you're doing the right thing.
We will talk later about page blobs and block blobs, and we will talk about different scenarios.
Absolutely.
The streaming scenario and the random access scenario, you can access the individual page blobs or block blobs.
Myself, I tend to think of blobs more in terms of streaming. And if you wanted to random access, I tend myself to think more in terms of tables. Not that you can't go the other way, but when I make my own mental models of what fits where, I think of blobs in kind of the streaming sense, and if I have individual random access, I tend to think more in terms of tables myself. But we'll talk some more, absolutely. All right. That's how one fetches this. The original author, you will probably note from here on in, the original author of this PowerPoint deck, as you will see, never met a fade or transition effect that he did not like. I will have to apologize in advance for those. I didn't have time to take them all out. But read my, I think it will be the March issue of my column in MSDN Magazine. It's going to talk about how you should need a license to build a PowerPoint presentation. And how until you enter the license key that says you've been properly trained, PowerPoint will not run on any machine connected to a projector. Right? But we digress. Okay, let's go look. There's the account. There's where the container goes. The blob name. This is what you would do when you are accessing them restfully, like so. Blob containers. I talked about. It's the closet. It's not that interesting. A blob. Here are the operations that you can use, the restful operations, the web service operations, like putting a blob. Here, take this data and put it there. Getting a blob, go find me the blob that it is. Get me the data from it. Delete a blob. Copy the blob. Things like this. You can put metadata on the blob. It's got like a property bag on it, so you can, besides this name and mime type that are the things that everybody uses, there are any number of a reasonable number of name value pairs that you can have. You can access a blob. A blob has a name, just like its closet has a name. I will show you sample code of these, so that's why I'm going kind of quickly over them. So something you want to add, Manu?
What's nice is that you can include a slash in the name of the blob. And this way, you can have directory hierarchy, not just container and blob, but blob inside the blob.
On a parent directory hierarchy, yes.
You can look at it as a set of directories, which is kind of similar to what we know in a file system.
I have that in my code sample.
Yeah, of course.
I'll show you that when I get there.
The API even supports that.
It does. And here, you know, when you move into something new, one of the main things that I see in that new thing is they make it possible for you to do the old thing that you're sort of ostensibly leaving. The classic example of that is in WPF, Windows Presentation Foundation, where you, for your container, you can have, you know, you can have a grid and all this, but you can have a canvas. In a canvas, the controls stay in fixed positions like they did in Windows Forms. So they make it possible for you to do in the new thing what you did in the old thing. And on the one hand, that lowers the activation energy. It says, okay, yes, I'm more willing to make the jump to the new thing because I know I can totter to my feet and say, hello world, relatively quickly, relatively easy. At the same time, it postpones the day before you have to bite the bullet and go and use this new environment in the good, new, useful way that it has. And you've seen, how many times have you seen guys that are still writing C code, C language code, even if they're in C sharp?
What's beautiful here...
And that's why, you know, a blob drive and blob directories, in some sense, I feel that you're... When you use that, you're kind of hanging on to the old ways and not fully committing to the new. And to my way of thinking, it's time to, you know, chug down a Kool-Aid and get on and use these brand new things the way they're supposed to be.
Yet, you know, reality is that we're not starting from scratch.
Oh, reality. Extensive and reality.
That's reality. And if I have my application which uses files, and it depends on NTFS API, I'm very happy to use the new blob system, but look at it in an NTFS way, and this is why I have the drives. Well, so it just simplifies migration process to the cloud because I use the same API that I love.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And if Microsoft didn't make that backwards compatibility possible, you know a third party would jump in right away. I mean, goodness knows I wrote MessageBox back before WPF had it. So, you know, I know how that goes. All right, so let's talk. You can enumerate the blobs. You can go look and see what's in it. And again, I will be showing you a sample code of this, so that one isn't all that important. See what I mean about the fade effects? You can, if you're looking, if there are large lists of blobs, you can say, here, give me the first so many of them. I don't know. To my way of thinking, you should not be enumerating that many blobs other than as a directory or something like that. You should probably maintain a list, perhaps a table, perhaps even a relational table, of the blobs that you have and which one lives where and what lives inside it, so you can go straight to the blob that you want, it seems to me. That just enumerating the contents is
well, that's a nice OData query. So here we can see the support of OData, which is growing. You can see OData kind of everywhere. And I can use OData with my blobs.
You better not tell me that OData is love, okay? There's a certain guy here at Microsoft that likes to preach that. And I haven't swallowed that particular piece of Kool-Aid myself. All right. Under the hood, when you talk about blobs some more, there are two kinds. There is the block blob. It is targeted primarily at streaming workloads. You can I will show you in the API where you can just say, here, take this stream and stuff it into that blob. I find it quite easy. Or there's a page blob where you have an amount of memory that is reserved. You can access it. It's pretty much a blob with random access. Whereas if you have a read and write here, there you have some address space. And you can hit this block, but not that one, but not this one, and so on. All right.
That's two different scenarios.
They are, and I tend to think of the blobs for the first one, and I tend not to think of blobs for the second one. You know, to me, it, you know, just the name blob implies the lack of an internal structure, and hence makes me think of that in the streaming case. Not to say that you can't. Certainly you can. Certainly you do. I myself tend to think in other terms.
Well, you know, I use the page blobs and I like them very much. It's just different scenarios. I want to have a large container for stuff, but I want to have the access to a particular slot, like a huge array, I would say. Uh-huh. So it's the same thing as a giant array somewhere. And if you look at the application that takes a giant array and puts stuff in it, this giant array is usually in memory. Now, the problem is that memory does not scale. And here, we're in the cloud, and the cloud is all about scaling. So putting a huge data in memory and working with it does not scale very well. The solution for that is taking that memory, that block of memory that you allocated, and put it in a page blob. And now you can do the same thing that you have done with that memory block. You can still allocate stuff, you can still put stuff wherever you want because it's a random access scenario, and you're happy to go.
Okay, good thought. So, okay, I really don't have a lot of time to talk about shared access. We're going to see that's the talk tomorrow.
That's my goal. Shared access signature will allow you to have access control on top of blobs. As I said before, blobs are kind of independent. So you put something in the blob, and then anyone can access it.
That's kind of it. I tend to think of blob access more through my cloud program, through my compute instance, and if you want to make them stand alone, then you've got a different identity.
You have to support security and access control. So this is exactly why we have shared access signature, and for details, we'll speak about that in the security talk tomorrow.
That's right, tomorrow. Very good. All right. The content delivery network, as I was saying, if you have read-only data that you access frequently, classic example is the jukebox. You can put it into this content delivery network, put it closer to the customers, which is nice. The cost for downloading a gigabyte is a lot less, and you know, the costs have a way of changing. So you know, if the price differential is different by the time you read it, by the time you get there, you know, I told you so. So there's actually, I kind of like this slide, actually. Here's the blob service here with pick1.jpg, and here's the CDN, and you've got these locations at the edge of the CDN, and there's the user looking to download this picture. There he is. You know, you register this thing with CDN. Here these edge locations point at this storage account, and the... Yes, we know. And here, this guy's going to do a get. The get is going to go to the edge location like this. The edge location is going to fetch it from pick one. He's going to give it back to the user like that. It's going to have a certain time to live. So this is very much a caching
thing. It is a cache.
It is a caching thing. Why don't they use that word?
You know, in the company I work for in Israel, in Sela, we do lots of videos.
Yes.
We provide videos where we... give details about all sorts of technologies. Mm-hmm. We instruct using videos, exactly what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And we found that the CDN really provides a great performance and improves the performance for our customers.
Okay.
And our customers are very happy to consume those videos from the CDN. Mm-hmm. And they get a much better experience.
It works so faster, it costs less.
It costs less, it works faster, so hey, that's a great thing.
Works for me. Right. Okay, and then the next time this guy makes the request, there it is. It hits the server, hits the CDN server in the edge, comes right back. You know, it's still in the time to live. When the time to live expires, it hits it, and now it has to get refreshed. Zingo, cache as before. All right, so.
You know, the first customer...
Okay, we get the point. Let's go to the next one here.
The first customer... will feel that it has a higher latency because the first customer comes to the CDN, the data is not there, so then they go all the way to the blob, they bring the data, and then they put it in the CDN, and then they take it back from the CDN to the customer.
They'll never notice. Nobody is surprised when the web is slow.
So the first customer will be a little bit unhappy, but then later customers, other customers, will be very, very very happy with the...
You know, if it bothers you, why don't you just be the first customer? Seriously.
This is what we do.
Yes.
This is exactly what we do.
You hit it first, and then you wait. You know, it's priming the beer tap, you know, for the when the bar customers come in. Okay, going to talk just a teeny bit about Azure Drives. Basically, they took a blob and put an NTFS file system on it. It just used the blob as if it were a hard drive. And what's good about it is, if you have, as Mona was saying, if you have an existing application that uses the file system, you can put it up in the cloud without having to completely re-architect it, which is probably not a bad idea. Right? And the drive's going to be up to 1 terabyte, which is kind of nice. You can mount them. You can do remote access with them. All kinds of fun stuff. There are the drive calls that you can make to create one, mount it, unmount it, things of this nature. But you will find them. You will find them handy. You will find them useful. I don't know. I mean, if you have legacy applications, absolutely. If you're writing a new thing, if I were you, I'd consider using one of the other abstractions more directly. But if you have an existing application, uses a drive, and don't feel like re-architecting that piece right now, zingo, you got it, no problem. So, to sum up, SQL Azure is the database in the cloud using SQL. What am I doing with a SQL Azure here? I don't know, but I will give a quick review of what we talked about. We talked about how to go out into the web, you need to, how to go out into the enterprise, you need storage. To go into the cloud, you need to scale. How there are two broad kingdoms of storage. There is the non-relational and the relational. How the relational is like SQL Azure, is like SQL Server, and you will be talking about tomorrow. The non-relational breaks down into blobs and drives and tables and queues. We looked at blobs, binary large objects, kind of buckets of bits. They live in blob containers, which are closets full of buckets. We looked how there are two different flavors. There are page blobs and and block blobs. That's right. And we looked at drives, how there is an actual, it looks like a file system. It's built on top of a blob. Makes it a lot easier to take your existing app that uses the file system and bring it into the cloud. All right? And so now we will take a 10-minute break. We'll come back, and then I'll show you tables, I'll show you queues, and then I will show you a code sample of blobs and tables and queues as well. All right?
Okay.
Okay, 10 minutes, and we'll see you.